WDRBY, Rolling Derby Radio, is proud to present Q-Tips with Electrocution, legendary player for the Carolina Roller Girls. Send your questions in right now to electrocution at carolinarollergirls.com. That's ELEKTRAQTION at carolinarollergirls.com. And now, get ready for Electrocution, only on WDRBY, Roller Derby Radio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Q's Tips. It must be Wednesday night. I'm Electrocution from the Carolina Roller Girls. You can reach me at electrocution at carolinarollergirls.com, or you can find me on Facebook under Renee Q McHugh, because Facebook stole my name, still hasn't given it back. I'm starting to lose interest in getting it back at this point. Facebook can suck it. Anyway, tonight's guest is Nathan Bettis from Collision Men's Roller Derby. Say hi, Nathan.
Hey, guys.
And Nathan, you guys just got back from you got back recently from Battle of Bunker Hill.
Right.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Right. So this was our first tournament of the year. Mm-hmm. We went to one last year that was in Texas. We're going to two this year.
What's the other one you're going to?
We're going to it's in Denver. Mm-hmm. It has Mayhem in the name, I'm afraid.
It has Mayhem.
Yeah.
They get confusing after a while. It's just like, whatever.
I was going to say March Mayhem, but it's a little late for March Mayhem.
Yeah, a little bit.
But yeah, so that one is actually like a proper tournament with brackets and, mm-hmm. you know, where you play teams based on who just won, who just lost. Battle of Bunker Hill was
kind
of
like
it was all prearranged. Mm-hmm. Before we went, we knew that win or lose, like these were the four teams, three teams that we were going to play mm-hmm. against. Yeah, four teams. We
four teams. Four teams, right?
Yeah,
we weren't originally going to play four.
No, everyone was going to play three, mm-hmm. and then one of the other teams had to back out, and it was just going to throw off the entire thing. And they asked, would any leagues like to step up? And we did.
Mm-hmm.
So they all appreciated that, and we appreciated it too, because just the nature of the way our league works, and a lot of men's leagues, we got to a lot of play time that we don't normally get, and we got to tune stuff up every single game.
Well, and you also got a full ref crew.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You had a NSR. You had, like, the whole experience, whereas sometimes you don't get that because you'll get, like, we can barely scrape enough refs together.
Right.
Or...
And in this case, because we were up in New England, this is where a lot of the top MRTA refs come in. For instance, mm-hmm. Mistrial was there mm-hmm. Doing a lot of our games, and she's, like, the head of MRTA officiating. So.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So it was a great opportunity for us.
Now, how did you guys feel physically after your fourth game?
Well, I mean, there weren't really that many injuries. I mean, I think a lot of us maybe could have used a little more conditioning. A mm-hmm. lot of us felt just fine. I personally am still recovering from a cold that you might be able to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a cold. That was my only...
No, I think everyone gets sick when you go to Derby things, because it's like every kind of microbe
is,
you touch your, you know, and especially when you're going to tournaments because you're running into
the airplane.
Well, that too, but I really do think that like we're going to be going to ECDX and it's in Feasterville, Pennsylvania, which is outside of Philly, and every year people are like the Feasterville funk, everybody gets sick. It's just, I really do think that because we're so like on top of each other, and when you're playing in a tournament you're running into three or four different groups of people that you wouldn't run into, mm-hmm. so you're exchanging microbes the entire time,
right? Exchanging all the bacteria.
Yeah, it's so gross. Mm-hmm. But I do think that's how people get sick. They tend to get sick.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I really wish that like one of those like hand wipe places, you know, like Handy Wipes or something, would sponsor roller derby, because they, you know, it'd be really good advertising, because we really do get sick from those things.
Mm-hmm.
I've yet to come home from a tournament feeling awesome because I usually pick up something.
Mm.
It's gross.
Well, in this case, yeah, there weren't a lot of injuries on my team. Mm-hmm. There was one, but considering the level of play that there was, that was a great job by everyone.
Did anyone actually, so tournaments are pretty notorious for at least one major injury. Did you have any of that?
So I did miss the single game where there was a major injury.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like an interesting bit of trivia about this particular tournament was that it was hosted in a Shriners, the terminology has changed. It's not a Shriners temple, but basically a Shriners temple.
Mm-hmm.
And the Shriners are like very medical oriented.
Yes.
So
the
medical situation there was just like, it was insanely good.
Well, that's great.
Apparently they had like their entire emergency communication system going when this skater was
injured.
Hurt, and they had it taken care of as nearly as good as you can imagine.
Well, I hope that they get, you know, quick recovery, because it's all you can do.
Right.
And it's just injuries or injuries. If you had to compare it to the other tournament that you were at, which one did you like best so far?
I liked this one.
Mm-hmm.
Shock Exchange was there. I mean, I'm sure Shock Exchange takes every game that they play seriously, but it's kind of a given that they're going to champs this year.
I hope so. I love Shock Exchange. You know, I love Wolverine. I have a big old heart for Wolverine, so if he's listening. Well, guys.
They're all great guys.
Yeah.
But then the next highest team there was Mass, who was hosting, and they're hoping to get into champs. They're right on that bubble. They're like 10-ish. Mm-hmm. So they needed to perform really well. And, you know, they played us, and they were really nice about it. I mean, you know, we both knew that this had to have a certain spread. And they beat us, and they made sure that they made that spread.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just great sportsmanship by them still.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because I really like knowing that teams out there who are good have good sportsmanship. I hate it when you run into a team that you really kind of admired from afar. You're like, wow, they're really good. And then you play them and you learn who they really are, you know, behind their skating. And you're like, oh, you're kind of a douchebag team. Great, you know. And it happens, you know. You run into those teams where they're really good. They're really good skaters, but they're not very nice people. And you're just like, sucks for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm glad to hear that. All right. We have a lot of questions tonight. The first one, and I think this is a great question, is from Merle Pinkins. He's the guy that he's done some bumper music for me.
Okay.
He's a really good musician. But he said, I guess this is a silly and or dumb question. What can you do now that you couldn't do before skating? And I said, this was a great question.
Right. I mean, like, generally my fitness is better, but I mean, I've been in great shape at different points in my life before when I've done other sports. But I think one of the things that, like, I can do now is, like, public speaking, run meetings at work or whatever. Like, a lot of my social anxiety has gone away.
Oh, you had social anxiety before Derby?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would have said that I was a very shy person. I'm not the most outgoing now, but, like, I have a lot more confidence.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. For me, it was like physically I can walk my dog Echo, who is about, well, at the time she was 72 pounds for a while there, and she's the one that pulled me off my feet before I was skating and messed up my ankle really badly because she's just strong, you know, and she would, and now she pulls me and she doesn't, you know, I don't go anywhere. I'm like, oh, that's all you're doing, you know, so that's a huge thing for me. Like, my balance is better, you know. Not necessarily that I won't, like, stumble, but I won't fall. There's a difference. Like, before, if she had pulled me off my feet or pulled me off balance, I would have fallen. That's how I messed up my ankle. Whereas now, if she does catch me off balance, I just take a couple, you know, I take a couple steps and I have my balance back underneath me.
Right.
It's much easier to get your balance on flat land than it is on wheels. So that's a huge thing for me, like, because I'm clumsy.
Yeah.
So learning to be able to keep my feet moving without skating, and I'm like, oh, hey, I don't fall as much, you know. the other thing I've really learned how to do, just being in roller derby in general, is use Google Documents. Because, you know what? I never would have learned how to use Google Documents had I not had to through roller derby. Because we use them for freaking everything in our league. So, oh, is there a Google Doc on that? I'm like, freak, yes, there's a Google Doc. Did you make a Google Doc on that? I'm like, God, I hate Google Docs, but I use them all the time now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's increased my technology exposure. But it's really funny, because I never would have touched it. I would have been like, what do I need to make this for? You know? Your league uses them, right?
Yeah, we do.
Uh-huh.
And, like, along those lines, I think, you know, like, some of us have picked up things to do with business.
Yes, very much.
And so on, yeah.
It's just funny to me, because, like, I was thinking about this the other day, and I was just like, wow, you know, I do a lot on online now, where I'm sharing things and Facebooking. I probably Facebook more because of roller derby. You know, I never would have. Otherwise, I look back on some of my posts from when I wasn't in roller derby, and I'm like, I'm hungry. That's my post on Facebook, and then nothing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I post more now. I think I'm more social online than I've ever been in real life. So that came from roller derby, too, because otherwise I'd be like, who are these people?
Yeah.
I don't want to talk to any of them. But we all have this thing in common, so it's easy now.
That's true.
All right, next question. Rhonda McIntosh asks, what are some of your favorite tournaments to attend as a skater and why? Is there a dream tournament you've never been to yet and like to go?
I don't know if the Big O format has changed since we were last approached. But what I was going to say is we talked with somebody up there, mm-hmm. and they wanted CRG and CMD to come together. They were trying to collect sibling leagues to come up together. And if that's the case, regardless, I would still like to go.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of my dream tournaments.
It's not one of my dream tournaments, but it's definitely an important tournament that I'd like to go to as a skater. I've been to D2s as a skater. I will be going to ECDX as a sanctioned skater. Mm-hmm. I've done it as a bootlegger and as just an independent. We've been to Beach Brawl, and we've just went to the Skate Down and Shake Town. They changed the name so that, you know,
it's confusing. No,
so I've been to a couple of tournaments. Honestly, I think a tournament is good when they have great reffing, a good venue, and solid teams to play.
Yeah.
That's really, I mean, I liked Beach Brawl 1 year, and then the next year I really didn't like how it was run, and it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tournaments do change. But, I mean, if you want just like a nice venue and a nice place to go and hang out and have fun with your team, Beach Brawl is a really good place because it has all, you know, you're right there and the ocean is right there, and you know, great. You know, you look at all this really cool stuff that's happening around you, and you get exposure to a lot of international teams, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's fun.
And there's a lot of really great vendors that are at Beach Brawl because a lot of them are based in Florida, right. So they all come to it.
How many years has that been going on?
I believe this is the fourth year, I want to say. And we've done it for 2 years, and then we didn't do it this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think ECDX has been a dream of mine for a really long time, coming as a sanctioned skater on a 20-player roster. So I'm really excited about that. And hopefully we're going to be hitting D2s again, so that'd be exciting too.
Yeah, cool.
So, those are my two. All right, here's a Case Demondes. I love her name. This is a legit question, not me being an a-hole. But why is there so much farting in roller derby? My NSO buddy complained about getting crop dusted all the time managing the box. Well, first of all, I will say this. I don't fart in roller derby. And I don't normally, like, have to pee very much in roller derby because once I start playing, that all sorts of tightens up and, like, stops working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't have these issues, but a lot of my teammates do. And I've been around teammates where you're, like, sitting on the track doing a drill, and you're like, who did that?
You know? I haven't seen a lot of that in my league either.
We have some reoccurring offenders, let's just put who have digestive issues, and I think roller derby makes some people very anxious.
That's probably why.
Yeah, and so they have abdominal issues, and they just, you know, some people just don't function well under pressure and stress. And
but they deal with it.
Yeah, that's how they deal with it. They have to vent, you know, literally. we have some people on our team that have digestive issues, such as, like, they get acid reflux,
mm-hmm.
and so they burp a lot. You know, you're sitting... We used to have a girl on the team, Mordant the Misanthrope, and she was a little before your time, but she would literally be in practice, and you'd just be sitting there, and all of a sudden you'd hear this... And you'd be like... Who let that dinosaur in here? Uh-huh. Oh, it was Morden burping. Uh-huh. She would just belch like crazy, and you just look at her like, wow, that came out of you? And she'd be like, yeah. So I don't know. I think some people are either very earthy and very in touch with all his bodily functions.
Yeah.
Or are they just very nervous? I think the nervousness causes a lot of stress. So maybe a lot of jammers are in that box, and they're pooting away. I mean, the guys don't generally fart around, at least since I've been around him. I don't really...
No, my team doesn't, and like the teams that we've played, that's never been something that
really dealt doesn't with seem like a farty large. Kind of thing. Yeah. Although the men stink really bad, like I will say that you guys smell really like worse than we do.
I would believe that.
Yeah. You used to have a skater, and I'm not going to mention his name, but he used to eat some very like spicy Asian dishes, and he would come to practice and he would smell like a corpse, like he'd been buried for a while.
Right. There are particular people that probably have...
I really felt ill being around him. And I'm around people that never wash their gear. So, you know, and I'm like, that I would refuse to work with that guy because he smelled that bad.
Mm.
But, I mean, that was just his sweat. He wasn't farting.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think maybe it's just nervousness. or some people just really in tune with their bodies and, and you know, celebrate the gas. I don't know.
Guess so.
But that's a great question. All right. Next question. Q, here's an anonymous question for your show. How should a small team handle ex-members, skaters, and or coaches trash-talking the team after they've left and trying to lure remaining members away? Is it best to ignore it or confront the guilty party? Thanks in advance.
So, I've never dealt with this firsthand, have you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean, there's one of our captains has dealt with it on the team that he coaches.
Oh, yeah.
And what happened there was that skater left his team because of issues that they had with everyone and started another team and basically got thrown out of our own league. and so now this first league is working with the new league and teaching them, and their long game is to say, why don't you just come skate with us?
Of course. I mean, here's my thing. So people leave Derby or teams or whatever for several reasons. You know, they could be pissed off. They could be just tired of it. They could be, they want something more like a more competitive league or a less competitive league. You know, they want something different, and that's okay. And those people might be disgruntled when they leave for whatever reason, like, oh, they put a lot of time into it and it didn't turn out to be what they wanted. So they went to look for something else. They might complain. You know, they may be like, well, that's what I wanted, and this is why it didn't work out, and I'm over here now, right? So, and you guys are so much better. So part of that complaining or bitching or talking crap about it, the former team, might be to assure the new team that, yes, I'm here, and I want to stay here. You know what I mean?
True.
So I get it. You know, that happens. I think it happens at jobs, too. Like, so somebody leaves a job for whatever reason, and they're like, oh, my God, I'm so happy that it's not like it was over there.
Right.
They're not necessarily talking crap, but it's more like, I'm reassuring everybody here that I want to stay, you know, and this is much better. The other thing is, we've had to deal with this a couple times. You have people that leave for whatever reason. They get fed up, or they don't want to be as competitive, or they think they're better and deserve more playtime. That's happened a couple times where people are like, I think I deserve more playtime. We're like, well, this is what you're getting right now. We'll talk about it in the future. And they're like, whoops, I'm leaving. Those people, when they talk crap, I hear about it. You know, you hear about it from other people and you're like, they're talking crap about the team and everything. And I'm just like, let them. Because roller derby is a small ass community. And when someone talks crap like that and sits there and just denigrates the league they just came from, you have to start wondering, is it this person or is it the league? And eventually you're going to figure it out, and it happens, you know, and you are going to run into those people over your derby career again and again and again, especially if it's in the same area, you know. So just watch what you say, because it comes back to you. I mean, we had a girl that left CRG and then ended up playing against us on a team, and she was terrified we were going to beat the crap out of her. Like, specifically go after her for all the crappy things she said. She told me that. And I was like, I didn't care. Honestly, didn't care about you or whatever you were saying, you know? And she was like, oh, I thought you guys were going to kill me. You know, I'm like, why? You know, it just showed your character.
Yeah.
You know, and that's sad but true. You just have to be the better person about it. You can confront them, but they're either going to deny it or say, so what? I mean, really, do we have any roller derby police? No. I mean, you could say something and be like, this person's a shitty person, and people would be like, okay, whatever. I don't want to be a part of your drama. So just let it go, and remember that we live in a very small community, and that stuff rebounds on people. It just happens. So you don't get the same opportunities that you would normally get if you just left and were gracious about it. So just be careful what you say. It's important. All right, next question. This is a last-minute question, actually, from The Mountain That Skates, and he's written in before. Hey, Q, a lot of leagues seem to struggle with recruitment and retention for refs and NSOs. What do you think the key is to getting and keeping officials?
Right, we talked about this before. It's, yeah, be nice to them.
Don't be an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, there's so many ways you can do that. Just, you know, being good to them, treating them decently, and then also helping compensate them. You know, they're coming out to all of your games or your practices. And, you know, they're not skating like you.
Right.
They're not getting that out of it.
They're not getting some of the recognition of the glory and the,
right.
you know.
So, at this tournament, they had, like, this big buffet mm-hmm. that they had set up in the back that was for the refs.
Mm-hmm.
And that team that was hosting, you know, I saw, like, crock pots where, you know, someone had made something.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else brought in donuts and everything. It was for the refs all weekend.
I've seen that. Yeah, I've seen that at Kalamazoo had the same thing. They had like a ref NSO room
right.
where they had like just a layout for them,
right.
which was really nice because that's where the captains and coaches meeting was. And we were like, oh man, the refs are eating well.
yeah.
You know, so that's good.
Right.
It's one of those things where this is where I find this question is tough because it depends what the ref wants out of it too.
Yeah.
So, if, or the NSO, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm a ref or an NSO and I just want to casually ref for my league,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's my local league, maybe like I've retired or I didn't really want to be in contact, you know, roller derby, but I can step up and help because I can skate and I do understand the game
mm-hmm.
and I want to ref. Well, that's where it gets tricky because let's say that's a very competitive league and they want refs that are very competitive and the higher end ref and the ref that is going to give all the time and effort and energy to the league and learning the game and getting certified and, you know, being the best ref that he or she can be. Or, you know, it, or you have the people that are like, I show up once a month and I ref and I have a good time wheeling around and then I'll show up for your home team games, you know. I mean, it depends on the level. It's just like having skater levels.
Yeah.
You know, what does the ref or the NSO want to get out of being a ref or an NSO? Do they want to go on for higher certification, go to tournaments, become well known in the ref world?
Yeah.
Or do they just want to be like, I just want to help, you know? And those are two different levels and they need two different things.
Yeah.
The I want to help needs the appreciation, right? And the encouragement to keep coming. But the higher level ref might be like, hey, I can't make it to your team game because I have a tournament I have to go to.
Right.
And now you kind of have to be like, we're not mad about it, but we really need you at our team game. You know what I mean? We understand you have your own goals, but if you want to be a part of our league, we need you here as much as possible. You know, and it becomes a real struggle. So you have to talk to your refs and see what their goals are. Like, what do they want to do? What are they getting out of this? Same with the NSOs. NSOs doing the same thing, right? Some NSOs are like, sure, I'll run the box, you know? Yay, what am I doing, right? And some NSOs are like, I want to get certified. I want to be in a tournament. I want, you know, I want this recognition. I want this patch. I want all this other stuff. You have to talk to them about it. And it may change for them. They may start off with, yay, I'm happy to be here, or to, shoot, I want this, you know? It's competitive. Reffing and NSOing is competitive now.
Yeah.
So, it's tough. I don't know. It's a really hard question to answer because it depends on where you are as a competitive league or a non-competitive league and where the refs are as competitive or non-competitive and as NSOs are.
Right.
And I don't know. There's a lot of pressure on refs now to get everything exactly right because the WFTDA up the ante with, hey, every point counts, right? If there's a point differential and it's within a certain, you know, every point that that jam ref didn't see or did see or gave extra or didn't give right, you know, now there's a lot of pressure on those refs to get that job right and make sure they're doing the job they're supposed to do. So it's really a lot of stress on them, plus the stress on the team dealing with them, you know? So I don't know. I don't know how we keep people. I say pay them. Not leagues necessarily, but I think money needs to be a part of this. And you were talking about that with your soccer league.
Right. So in the soccer league that I played in, what would happen is at the beginning of every season, it would explain to you that there would either be an additional fee or there would be some part of your registration that would go to paying for the associated refs organization that is in the area. And that meant that, you know, they'd always show up. They weren't paid by either team. They were impartial. They were going to do the best job that they could. And that worked out really well.
I think it's going to come down to we need some sort of association guys paying for it because they, refs have to travel so far. They travel just as much, if not more so, than players do. So, I mean, it's just getting down to the point where maybe the WFTDA or MRTA has to step up and say we're going to take a fee from every league and
Yeah.
Give that out to the, you know, each sanctioned game or something.
Things will probably eventually go that way. Mm-hmm. Like the NSO programs were unified, mm-hmm. And now the reffing
right.
is going through that. So I would guess that probably over the next couple of years we start to see something
and
along those lines.
If something like that does happen, I think there are going to be points where refs, that even is going to be more competitive for the ref to, you know, mm-hmm. get into that pool of refs that are chosen to get this payment, you know, because they're not just going to pick somebody that's not sanctioned or, you know, certified right. or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's going to be even more pressure. So, I don't know. It's getting a little scary up in here. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that'll get figured out next 5 years.
Yeah.
I probably won't be around the next 5 years, so that's okay. Until then. All right, next question is from Barbara A. Dolan. Have you ever done a show about helmet use? No, but I always talk about helmets, so this is a good topic for me. Not necessarily just during Derby, but why folks do or don't wear helmets while on wheels or otherwise, bikes, skateboards, skating outdoors, etc. It shocks me the number of Derby girls who know the risks of concussion, brain injury, and yet seem to be too cool to wear a helmet when they're not practicing or playing. I'm this close to writing a long lecturing post about it and would love you and your guests and / listeners' perspectives.
So I know that the women on your team, when I've dropped in on the skate park sessions that mm-hmm. you guys go to, everyone is always wearing their full gear.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because, you know,
right.
Part of that is not because CRG makes you, because this is a non-CRG mm-hmm. function, but the part of it is like, hey, I'm on a competitive team,
right?
And I kind of need to take care of my body as much as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. If I get injured, I'm screwing my team over. So yeah. let's try to minimize the injuries you can mm-hmm. get. So that's why we do it.
Yeah.
It's sort of an allegiance to the team, you know?
Right. So, yeah, I don't see you guys cycling or skateboard or anything, but mm-hmm. I assume that for those reasons you just gave that you guys are pretty responsible about.
No, I don't wear a helmet or anything when I'm riding my bike.
Really?
No. Never have.
Huh.
Well,
you should.
I've never fallen off my bike to the point where I need a helmet, like ever. And that includes me when I was a kid and I used to jump my bike over stuff.
Yeah, I think the same principle applies, though. It's.
I mean, it's riding my bike. It's like when you go to open session, do you wear your helmet?
I do. Skate? Absolutely.
Oh, I don't.
I always wear my helmet, my knee pads, and my wrist guards.
I wear my helmet, not my helmet. I don't wear my mouth guard. I wear my wrist guard, my knee pads, and my elbow pads. That's what I do when I'm open skating.
Yeah. But no, the helmet always goes on my head. And like even when you're just bicycling around your neighborhood, you mm-hmm. could have whatever your neighbor's daughter's new boyfriend come ripping around, and then you do need that helmet. So
I'm not going to wear my helmet when I'm riding my bike. I just don't. I've yeah. never done it. I'm 46.
Well,
so, yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm not going to lie. I don't do it. Do I think children should do it? Yes, because I think children are a lot more uncoordinated on the bikes and not as mm-hmm. aware. But I don't think, and especially if you're riding like heavy highway riding, I think you'd probably need your helmet because you are going to probably get hit by a car or at least tagged by a car.
Mm-hmm.
But in my neighborhood, I'm on the greenway. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I wear mine all the time.
And that's good. I don't think that anyone should not wear their helmet doing things. But like I said, I've been riding my bike for years without a helmet. But I'm not doing anything crazy on my bike either. So.
No, I didn't ride with a helmet when I was a kid. But when I got the touring bike that I have now.
See, that's a different bike. You know what I mean? Like
it is,
you're going
like
on the highway.
No, I mean, around here it's always neighborhood stuff because I don't live near a greenway.
Mm.
But yeah, I always wear my helmet. Yeah. And I see the guys in my neighborhood that are in the, I don't know, the neighborhood peloton. They do it.
They're in their little outfits.
Yeah, and they wear their helmets.
Their little cycling outfits, is what I always say. Yeah, I don't know. See, like, I look at guys, so we go down to South Carolina. North Carolina has a helmet law for
you cross that border and you
motorcycles,
see this,
right? And you see the guys in South Carolina without them, and it's a weird experience. You know, you look at them and you're like, geez, I don't know if I'd do that. But then again, I think...
That feeling that you got right there is the feeling I get when I see somebody on a bike that's not wearing that.
But
if
I wrecked a motorcycle, I don't think I'd be worried about my head at that point. Because if you wreck your motorcycle on the highway... You're probably not going to live through that. So I get why people don't wear them. I think if you are doing something that is unsafe, generally, and I don't feel like bike riding is unsafe. I mean, I might as well wear a helmet when I'm walking the dog than in this neighborhood, because someone can pull out of their driveway and hit me. I mean, where do you cut it off? But if you're doing something that's like, I'm doing tricks or I'm skating on the greenway, I always have my helmet on for there, because you could hit a little tiny pebble and go flying. I don't wear my helmet during open skate. I mean, I never have. I'm not doing speed skating or doing anything crazy then either. You know, I'm just skating around.
Now, you were a skater before you came
to
roller derby. Now, I guess maybe why I feel the way I do is, besides maybe two birthday parties when I was 14.
Right.
The first time I ever put on skates was for derby practice, and that's the way I came up was...
I think if you're doing anything outside, generally you should have your helmet on, you know, and that includes skate parks, you know, when you're on your wheels. It's just too many weird things can happen when you're on skates. Like I said, the first time I ever really wrecked myself at a speed practice was I was skating around the skate ranch and somebody had left a dime on the floor and I hit it and I was going really fast. I was doing, you know, I was with the guys skating, so we were doing really speed laps, and I hit that thing, and I flew. And, I mean, when you are going that fast, you're like, whoa, little tiny dime. I thought I'd run over a pencil. I was like, I was convinced there was, like, this giant doorstop that I had hit on the, and it really just messed me up. And once again, I didn't hit my head, but, you know, I slid for a good, like, 10 feet, you know, on the floor. And I was thinking, God, what did I hit? So because of that experience, I've always worn it when I'm skating outside because you never know what you're going to run into. Now, I've seen people go without helmets outside, and that's their choice, you know. Can't help them, you know, whatever they want to do. I also see people dive into pools without, you know, without knowing how deep it is.
Yeah.
That's way bigger risk for, a, you know, a head injury than possibly skating outside. I don't know. I think that if you're doing any contact stuff or trick stuff, you need to have your helmet on. You need to have your gear on. And I see people that go to open skate now, even though they're derby people and they're trained to fall using their knee pads and their, you know, whatever else, they go without any of that. And they, you know, I always have one person a year who falls, takes a knee, doesn't have a knee pad on, and messes up their knee. Every year. I'm like, what did you think was going to happen? You know, hopefully you're not hitting your head when you're falling. I mean, you shouldn't be training at any point where your head is part of the ground, but your knees definitely are going to hit. And as a kid, when you hit your knees on the ground, you're like up and at them.
Yeah.
Like 5 minutes later, right? You're like, woohoo, I've got burned a hole in my jeans, but, you know, I'm fine. Well, as an adult, that doesn't work as well. You also weigh a lot more as an adult. So, yeah, you should always wear your gear. I don't wear my mouth guard either. Do you wear your mouth guard when you go to open skate?
No, the two things I don't wear are my elbow pads and my mouth
guard. Yeah, see? I always wear my elbow pads because I've hit my elbow and it hurt really bad, so... And I would never wear my mouth guard open skating.
Yeah, I just know that I am one of the skaters who would be prone to take a knee.
Yes.
So I do wear my knee pads because I expect them to be there.
Yeah.
And then just another thing that I did was I've broken my wrist taking a fall when I was snowboarding.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was just thinking, you know, like it would have been so handy to have the wrist guards.
Now, have you gone skiing since you played roller derby?
No.
Okay. Did you wear a helmet before? When you were skiing, because that I haven't skied in a really long time, probably like 30 years, and now it's a norm to wear your helmet. Like, that to me is weird.
I didn't.
Okay, see?
I haven't.
That's probably even more dangerous than riding your bike.
I mean, like,
you got trees coming in.
Who was that? There's the actress that died.
Yes, there's a couple of people that have had that issue.
Yep.
So I think it just depends. See, that's a risk taking to me. Like, riding my bike's not risk taking. So it'd be like walking to me.
Yeah, maybe not a greenway, but it's like the other factors of like the mystery car. Yeah.
Once again, if I get like knocked over a car, probably the helmet isn't going to help me out any. It's probably going to be my limbs taking most of that damage. All right, next question. Tanya Trudell Butler, can you talk about announcers using inappropriate terminology at junior bouts? All right, and the example that was given that we talked about it a little bit, but a derby announcer this weekend had a favorite term of hit it and quit it after a jammer called off a jam.
Yeah.
Now, that's... Like, in my world, that is not a sexual phrase because it literally means you've got your 4 points and you're calling the jam. Like, it to me, it's depending on the connotation of where you are at the time.
But I mean, I've heard that term used.
Yeah, I know. I've heard the term other places, but if you most sports terms have these like weirdly sexual vibes, and I was gonna pull up. I can't do audio really well on this thing to cut in, but there's like you can just hear cuts of NFL announcers. using all sorts of like ridiculous things that they're trying to describe what's going on, but it sounds like a gay porn that they're narrating. Like he grabbed his ball in the crease and all this other stuff, and you're like, okay, that sounds really inappropriate.
Right.
But
I think this did though come from.
Yeah, it probably did, but I think now it's become something else, just like everything.
Well, yeah.
I mean, when you booty block somebody, I mean, booty. She's booty blocking someone, or, you know, there's a lot of other, there are worse things, like being in the box, you know, that could totally be a sexual connotation. Sure it can. I think hit it and quit it's probably marginal at best.
Yeah.
But I think announcers need to be careful of what they're saying.
Sure.
You have to know what the audience is.
Right, yeah. I mean, another thing I was thinking about this, too, is just when the announcers are just saying, like, rogue terms.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a jammer goes through the pack and they say five in the sky.
Yeah.
And it's like, they just made 4 points.
Yes.
Why is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think my favorite is natural grand slam. That used to kill me every time announcers say it, which has got nothing to do with sexual connotations or inappropriateness. It just... I hate that phrase, natural grand slam. So
yeah, but as far as like you know, doing something for a junior's bow, it's like, you know, why not just be really present about what you're saying?
Right, and you have to be careful. Well, first of all, here's the thing. So like the kids playing probably aren't hearing the announcers, because I don't know about you, I barely hear the announcers.
Yeah.
When I'm playing, I like, oh, there's announcers, yay, there's announcers. But generally, I only hear them if they say my name once in a while, and I'll be like, you know.
Yeah.
But I really don't hear what they're saying because I'm busy.
Yeah. I mean, even when I'm on the bench, it's still
It's sort of like blah, 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 I'm not listening to them.
Yeah.
So right there, that's probably a safety you're distancing yourself safety wise from the announcers, because I mean, they could say something obnoxious and you probably won't hear it as a kid. You're probably too busy. I mean, how many times have you tried to tell a jammer to call it and they're like la la la, and so they're definitely not listening to announcers.
You have the entire team making the motion on the side, like,
call it right. So if they can't hear that, they're probably not listening to announcers. And I've seen it in junior derby, it tends to happen a lot where the kids just sort of like la la la, still skating along. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. I think all announcers out there should be mindful of who they're, you know, narrating the game for.
Yeah.
And who, you know, just be careful. You know, there's some things, like, don't talk, here's a good, just rule of thumb, don't talk about body types when they're out there. You know, oh, she's a big girl. That's probably not going to go over well, especially if you're on broadcast. Okay, I'll just tell you right now, don't comment on body types or body parts, you know. I think a lot of announcers that I've heard over and over again are really good about not doing that. But then occasionally you hear one, you're like, why did you say that? You know? You just want to type in and be like, stop saying that.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, just be mindful. Be mindful that you're not all for the one team and not for, you know, saying very negative things about the one team and very positive things about the other. I've heard that, real or imagined, it can be told, you know, like your audience hears it and it becomes a thing. So just be careful, you know.
Yeah.
The players aren't probably hearing it.
Right.
Players probably don't know what the hell you're saying, but the but the audience is, especially if it's on broadcast.
Yeah.
All right, the second half is, Tanya writes, can you talk about how boys are demonized in junior derby? I personally get tired of my male skaters getting targeted. And I said, do they get targeted like other leagues don't want to play, leagues with guys in them for whatever reason, because they're too big or they're scary when they play, or, you know, they're aggressive or whatever. And she said, that's exactly right. We have boys on our team and we have an all-girl we have all-girl teams that sign up to bout us, then complain that our boys are too rough, and when in reality they are no rougher than our girls. Now, you've had a lot of experience with Raleigh Junior Rollers, and that's a...
Not personally, but yeah.
Well, I mean, you've been around them.
Yeah, I've been around them.
And they're a co-ed team.
Yeah, they are. And then also I've seen another team that they just formed, and they decided that they were going to be an all-girls team because the other juniors teams in the area would not play co-ed teams. And so they just decided, like, we're going to make a girls team.
So that's really weird, because I was thinking about it, like, other teams, like, I grew up playing YMCA soccer, right? And they were always co-ed. And it was never, you have to have this many boys on the field or this many girls on the field and all that. It was just, go play, you know. And
well, yeah, back to my soccer experience, the way that, you know, you're, I don't know if this could work for roller derby because it's a smaller group of people, but you know, you basically have like a 2-year mm-hmm. bracket mm-hmm. for your ages when you're growing up. So it's like you're under 10s, which means, you know, you're 10 and you're 9 and you're under 12s. And that could be one solution because, you know, honestly, I don't think most 8-year-old boys and 8-year-old girls are really going to be any different in the way that they play or their bodies. However, we now have picked up like the one of the juniors that's aged up. And mm-hmm. like, I'm not kidding, this kid could. Well, I should call him a man now because he's 18. But
he's a man.
He could grow a beard before I could. Uh-huh. And, I mean, he's like 6 feet tall.
It's all those he's hormones like, that they're eating.
Like, maybe. But, you know, he's like 5'11". And, like, I can see the hesitation that another league would have in playing that. So,
yeah.
And really the easy solution would be just like...
Do age brackets.
Just do age brackets.
Yeah. So I think this is her related person. Jennifer Trudell Butler wrote, we were at CRG a few weeks ago. Thanks for having us, blah, blah, blah. If you were going to... Okay, it says, yes, boys are demonized and targeted in junior derby. We all know it's a full contact sport, and there are varying degrees of strength, skill, and agility. If you're going to play a level 3 sanctioned bout or scrimmage mm-hmm. even, and you and your coach have decided you are qualified and skilled enough to play, you are playing level 3 derby. If there are boys on the opposing team, so be it. If you were hit legally and fairly by a male skater, calling him names and questioning his virility as a male in spite of his choice of sport is completely inappropriate.
Yes.
It is. I mean, that's inappropriate. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You should never be like a dick about someone hitting you legally. Mm-hmm. And even if they hit you illegally, you don't get to be a dick. It's a full contact sport. Mm-hmm. Things happen. We're on skates. You're going to hit somebody. Sometimes it's going to go awry. You don't do it on purpose. Right? If you are the skater, the coach, the ref, or the parent, it is a decision that needs to be made. I have a few boys who are very strong, and if you are significantly less strong than their female counterparts of equal age and size, if we are promoting inclusion, it needs to be across the board, which lends itself to another long conversation about divisions and classifications. Yeah. I think your idea of the ages is really good because I've seen 17-year-old girls mm-hmm. play against, like, 10-year-old girls, and I'm like, oh, dear Lord.
Right.
Who thought this was a good idea? Yeah. I mean, even if the 17-year-old girl is like, I'm just going to booty block, you know, it still looks bad.
Right.
And it just looks like a bullying thing happening. You know, you're like, oh, how's this little jammer supposed to get around this person who is basically an adult playing this game, you know, compared to her?
Right.
And I understand that they're all level 3s, but... Mm-hmm. Dear Lord, you know, it just doesn't seem right. So I think ages might be a good way of going about it. And, you know, getting more people involved in the sport would be a good way of doing it, too.
Right. And I mean, I'm sure it's more than just soccer, too. I think, like, peewee football.
Peewee
and
baseball, like, baseball. Yeah, all that stuff.
It's all age-based.
Yeah, and I think age-based is probably the best way to do it. I mean, there's a point where, as a 15-year-old girl, I might hesitate to play against a 15-year-old boy contact. Because, mm-hmm. not because I'm afraid of the 15-year-old boy, it's just, ew, I don't want to touch them, or I don't want them touching me.
Maybe, yeah.
And that is a whole different situation. That's a puberty situation, you know, like, ew, boys are icky, or ew, he's going to touch my butt. And that's, I mean, teenagers are hyper aware of that stuff, and they should be, you know?
Yeah.
That's when they're coming to grips with everything. So I can see that being an issue.
Yeah, I wish I knew more. I want to say that 2 years ago, there was a lot of footage out mm-hmm. of the JRDA champs, and I want to say that they had 2 champs. Mm-hmm. They had a co-ed champ.
Co-ed champ and an all-females champ.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm glad I never had to deal with this situation. I had no problems playing against guys in whatever sport, but most of my sports were not full contact sports. Yeah. You know, there was soccer, things like that, you know, mm-hmm. tennis. I didn't care. Mm-hmm. Golf. I didn't care. I'll take you on. But that wasn't full contact, and it wasn't something that I'd be sticking my butt in their crotch, mm-hmm. you know, when I was 15. I think I would have hesitated to do that. I probably would have hesitated a lot to do that. You know, so I think that, you know, that's one of those things that maybe we should talk about or think about as the sport continues, right?
Yeah.
All right, next question. This is from Kate Donaldson. She writes, how to ref in 3 easy steps? And she's grinning. It's not easy. So.
Is that the one where there's like 2 steps in the middle, one is question mark?
Question mark is profit. Yeah. Is reffing. Well, first of all, there's nothing easy about reffing. I've done it off and on, you know, casually, mm. very casually in my career. And every time I do it, it's like, oh my God, this is a whole different thing. My head hurts really bad from thinking, you know.
So everything that, all the leagues that I've seen, they have a ref program.
Mm-hmm.
The first step of their ref program is to have their refs pass their MSRs.
Yes. Level ones. That was what I was going to say. The first thing you need to do as a ref, regardless of who you are, is you need to be able to skate. Right. There's nothing more frustrating for me to look up and look at a ref and they're looking at their feet because they're not sure if they can skate or stop or something, or they're worried about their skating skill. And that interferes when a ref cannot skate. And I'm not saying you have to be freaking, you know, you don't have to be Bonnie Thunders, but you better be damn good at skating.
Right.
Like, your basics better be good.
Yeah. I mean, it's just going to happen that a skater is going to get knocked inside or outside of the track. And I mean, you're not going to have to do, like, the guy in the clip and, you know, like,
jump over
while maintaining, you know.
That's just an lead. Amazing.
Yeah. But, I mean, you are going to have to, you know, kind of just scoot out of the way.
Right. You're going to have to be able to step over a fallen skater. And so, you need to be aware enough.
Yes.
Of what's going on, and that means that you can't take your eyes off of what's going on in the pack either. You just have to be able to step over the person. And the person's probably not going to see you.
Right.
Like, this happens a lot on the outside, right? That if someone gets knocked out on the outside, the outside pack ref is coming around, and they're standing up to get back in, and there's a collision.
Right.
Right? So for your own safety and for that skater's safety, you have to be able to skate.
So, yeah, I think that's probably step one.
Yeah, and you have to have good endurance. That's step two.
Yeah.
Because you are, like, as all refs say, with pride and, you know, admonition to the other skaters, we skate in every jam. Well, yes, okay, but it's different skating. It's endurance skating. It is endurance skating.
Yeah,
you have to be able to maintain with the pack. You don't have to be able to jump over and block and hit people, but you have to be able to maintain and not get tired, because once you get tired, you lose your ability to think and multitask.
Yeah.
So you have to have really good endurance. I mean, let's just face it. You can't just be a slug.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be able to go from zero to couch to reffing a fast game. It's not going to happen. All right? You need to know the rules.
Mm-hmm.
You need to watch footage.
Yes.
And watch footage with refs.
Mm-hmm.
Because they watch footage differently than we do, as I have discovered several times as I've watched footage with refs. They watch refs. And they watch the calls.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something you need to be able to do, is sit there and go and watch footage. If you can't watch high-level or even medium-level roller derby with a ref, you know, going someplace to watch it, because that ref's probably busy the whole time reffing, you need to watch, sit down with the ref and train and watch it on, you know, be like, I don't understand why that call was made, and talk about it. Stop the footage and talk about it.
Right.
Or, hey, maybe they didn't make the right call.
Mm-hmm. Oh, now something that came up a little while ago, if you remember this, about what was it called, charging?
Yes.
It was a little frustrating for me because we talked about this and you were like, it's in the rules. There are, I don't want to say additional rules, but they're not
clarifications.
The rules, but there are guidelines for how a ref, and there's also another set for NSOs, how the officials should indicate that something has happened, and they should, you know, call their penalties and so on. So they're going to need more knowledge than just rules knowledge.
Oh, yeah. The rules are the beginning, though.
Yeah.
I mean, if you ask, if you look at refs, most of them, if they get into a discussion, let's just say on Facebook, over a rule, they can quote them chapter and verse. They can tell you where it came from and all that.
Right.
I can't. I can tell you the general rule, but I can't be like, blah, 3.7765.
Besides just rules, there's also like the standards and practices that they
have. And you're going to be changed depending on where you're getting trained. So, you know, I ask this question of almost when I'm captaining for a belt.
Oh, yeah.
I always ask this question. I'm like, what do you consider immediately leaving the track?
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, I get a different answer in different places.
Yeah, and there's
that's
always, like,
so annoying.
That rule that
yes.
for that season or for that time of the year is a little interesting. Like, it might have been like, how are you going to call multiplayers, or how are you going to call direction? So, yeah, just, I, you know, there's ref culture, and, you know.
There's definitely ref culture. You need to be, that's another reason you should be a part of the ref culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's different than skater culture or NSO culture. You know, it's different. And once I said, it's competitive.
Mm-hmm.
There is a competitive ref culture. They're competing over, you know, well, they look at each other and they look at the patches on each other's jerseys. And they're like, well, that person's very special, you know what I mean? And I'm always like, yeah, but you're all refs.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, to me, the ref culture, it's like being in a different little fraternity there. Mm-hmm. They have a different fraternity. They have different rules. Like, yeah. It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. So learn your ref culture, you know, learn all that stuff. And then, you know, I'm considering doing reffing, but very casually when I retire. And one of the things that our head ref, Tripp, said, he goes, you need to step away for 2 months. Don't be around your league for 2 months. Mm. Because you need to be not a league member at that point. You have to be something outside of the league. Mm. You can help your league, but you can't be a skate person. You know, you've got to learn to separate yourself from that kind of stuff so you don't get drawn in and become a coach or, you know, try to help people with their skating and stuff like that. And I was like, gosh, that's going to be really hard, but it's good. It's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that would be my tips. You got any other tips?
No, just...
Just do all those.
Yeah.
Just be really good at what you're doing.
Yep. Right.
And you know what? Here's the last one I will say. Be able to admit when you're wrong. Because you will make mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
Just like skaters make mistakes, we fuck up all the time out there. We're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, like you were saying, I have seen the refs watching the reffing when they watch the videos. And just like skaters, when you watch your game and you're watching yourself the entire first time through, you don't
see anything. you're like god damn it
yeah, the refs are watching that too. I think that's natural, and that's, you know, you want to improve whatever it is that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I missed that.
Mm-hmm.
Or I got that one right.
Yep.
So
and I think but growth comes from admitting when you're when you made a mistake, and I feel like that counts for skaters and that counts for refs. So and you know, sometimes it's going to be a difference of opinion between a skater and a ref, whether you called it right or not. Mm-hmm. But if another ref calls you out on it, talk about it. Be open enough to talk about it, because that's how you learn.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And last thing is from Jessica Thompson Christian. Have you talked about that blog entry from the person who stopped playing derby and grew 2 inches? All right. Well, Dolly Rocket retired, and she wrote about her... I believe the title of it was something like, "These are my stats since retiring from roller derby." And Dolly Rocket was a skater for Charm City, and then she transferred to Bay Area.
Okay.
And she is very well known in the derby community, and she skated for like 12 years.
Wow.
And she was talking about how her body has recovered since playing roller derby. And one of the things that she's noticed in her recovery was that she's gained back 2 inches in height. And I think that really freaked a lot of people out, because they don't realize that we are getting hit constantly. So it's like being in car wrecks constantly, and your bones start to like tighten up and compress every time you get hit. So yeah, when you leave the sport, you might be taller afterwards. Like, not... You didn't grow 2 inches, but you regained the 2 inches that you had before you came into the sport. But she listed a lot of things, and she said that our sport needs to really look at how it treats its players, and that she called out a lot of things like, hey, a lot of people that are trainers and coaches and skaters that have been through it are like the blind leading the blind in roller derby, because they didn't have an athletic background before they started the sport. They just know how to play the sport. They don't know how to, you know, treat injuries necessarily, or rehab injuries, or prevent injuries. I mean, we're getting better about it, right? You know, the roller derby community at large is getting better about it. You've got people that are trying to help you. But even, she said, even those people, not necessarily certified professional, you know, trainers. So be careful. She said, really look at, you know, other sports have, you know, associations that can, that try to protect players' safety and health and stuff like that. And roller derby doesn't have that right now. I mean, we are the players. We are the people that do the sport. We're, you know, we're everything. Instead of just, like, she says, you know, question when a team just tapes down over, like, metal things on their track. Are they being the safest they can be and stuff like that? And I'm like, well, you know what? She's right. She's right. She's like, question the fact that you play 4 games in an unair-conditioned warehouse in a weekend. She said, no other team does it. No other sport does that. There's always time off, you know, and you're in a much better situation usually than an unair-conditioned warehouse with very little medical, you know, facilities around it. And I think she brought up a lot of things that pissed a lot of people off. And I think she was right. I mean, our sport is pro-am. You know, we're sort of this weird professional but yet amateur sport, and we really do things, and we put ourselves at risk a lot because nobody's paying us to go to these places, so you want the most bang for your buck, right? You want those four games, mm-hmm. even though you probably shouldn't play four games in a 2-day or a 3-day situation. It's not really good for you, you know? Or you practice where we practice. We practice in a place that's horrendous during the summer and mm-hmm. freezing cold during the winter.
Yeah.
But because it's the only place we can find, you know? And some people are practicing outside, you know? It's like, that's not really safe either. So I feel like, you know, she brought up a lot of things that are wrong with roller derby and need to be looked at, but people are kind of angry. Mm. What do you think about... Do you think that roller derby is safe for people?
I think that we're doing better, but I think
we're doing better.
I don't.
We're doing much better. Before, people used to drink and play. I mean, it was the Wild West for, you know, way back in the day. Like, they did not know what they were doing.
Yeah. I remember when I first met Gypsy, mm-hmm. who was the speed skating coach for Gotham. Like, mm-hmm. they actually mm-hmm. went out and, I don't know if they approached her,
mm-hmm.
but they had somebody with, like, actual, mm-hmm. like, experience in coaching mm-hmm. speed skating, and, you know, like, she talked a lot about form. Like, if you go to one of her clinics, it's mm-hmm. like, wow, this is just adjacent to derby. This is not derby. But, you know, you're learning how to do something really well and proper.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to see things like that mm-hmm. start to happen. And then also, you know, safety, we're becoming more aware of that.
Well, yeah, and I've seen, and, you know, going back to the helmet issue,
mm-hmm.
This is one of my things, you know, especially in roller derby, but I've seen people put away helmets that they've had for years and years. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you'd see people and they'd have the same helmet because they got it specially mm-hmm. painted and they're never going to mm-hmm. get rid of it. And you see them for 5 years with the same helmet. You're like, that's mm-hmm. not safe.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you'd never hit your head, but you were banging it around in your car or whatever,
yeah.
it's not safe. Or it was those stupid triple eights with the mm-hmm. sweat savers in them. People have gotten rid of those. Like, I see a lot more attention to that.
Yeah, it's weird when you see one of those.
Yeah, like, but, you're like, why are you still trucking around in this crappy helmet? Don't you care about your head?
Yeah.
You know, when I first started with my hockey helmet, man, I used to get a lot of shit.
Mm.
You look stupid. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yes, I know.
Mm.
I don't care. You know, it's not really about looks at this point. Because mm-hmm. if I was really worried about looking stupid in roller derby, I wouldn't have played roller derby.
Because
mm-hmm. I look stupid probably 90% of the time. But the thing is, with the hockey helmet, you see more and more of them now. And you see people really paying. Like, S1 stepped in and they're like, hey, we can make a good skater helmet,
mm-hmm.
you know, with a base guard. Mm-hmm. So they're stepping in. I know that there are places in Sweden. There's a company in Sweden that's trying to make a skate helmet that's even better mm-hmm. than that.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's starting to pick up that people are like, oh, this is important.
Mm-hmm.
I need to, you know. So that's one thing. I see a lot more teams cross-training.
Yeah.
You know, worried about preventing those injuries, not to be, like, the strongest, the best, you know, bestest ever.
Uh-huh.
They're worried about injuries and preventing, you know, downtime. We still have a really ridiculous season, which is not good for us. I mean, most sports have a season and then they get time to recover, and we don't have that, you know?
Yeah, not really.
Nope.
I mean, what, officially, isn't it something like November and December is off for most teams?
Most teams, but some teams do their home seasons then, their home teams then.
But, I mean, isn't that like in WFTDA, isn't that when your games are...
No, they still do sanctioned games during that time.
But is that... Okay, so like in November of 2016, is that going to count towards 2017?
Yes.
Because that's after
Yes.
Champs.
Okay. Yep, anything after Champs.
Yeah.
So, like, some of the European teams are like, well, this is the only time we can get teams.
Mm.
You know, so it becomes like, how can you this be fair? And it's all because this is a skater-run place.
Yeah.
Like, if we had a backing by, you know, somebody putting money into the sport and saying when and what we could do, it'd be a different situation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that Dolly Rocket article is pretty interesting. I'll try to link to it on my my Facebook page. I thought it was really good.
Mm-hmm.
It really cracks me up that someone refers to it as the 2 inches. Like, she grew 2 inches. I'm like, no, she didn't grow 2 inches.
She regained
those 2 inches because her bones weren't getting the crap kicked out of them.
Yeah.
All right, so we got through almost all of our questions tonight, which is super exciting. Our last bit is, I want to get, this is going to be a quick one. I want to get faster and more stable at lateral moves. What are the tips that work for you? And I'm thinking agility ladder and stuff. What do you think? And I know you guys work on this too.
Yeah, I think looking up T-push.
Yeah.
And learning a T-push.
The T-Push, if you look up, Smarty Pants does the T-Push, so you can find video of her on there. Wolverine came down. We call it the Wolverine because he taught it to us, and he came down and showed us how to do it. I'm trying to think, do you know of any other skaters that have videos out there for that?
I know that, I always get his name wrong, Sarge Roll?
Sarge Roll?
Sarge, yeah. yeah, look up his stuff, Faster Skates, or is it Faster Girl Skates?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, that's another fantastic thing. She doesn't produce them anymore, she's retired, but Kamikaze Kitten did a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and Adam, I think, was Adam Matrix.
Adam Wills.
Adam Wills does them. They do, like, their clinics or whatever. Yeah. They'll do them on there. But look up T-Push on YouTube.
For, like, lateral movement. Yeah. I think that'll open up a lot of things for
you. And that's all edge work, so if you get if you can really work on that edge work, it'd be great. Talk your league into doing a toe-stopless practice, and you will learn that your edges probably need a lot of work. And I will warn you this, if you do a toe-stopless practice, you will fall on your ass a couple times, and especially when you're trying to stop backwards, because you will automatically go to your toe stop and you will face plant. So just be ready for it.
Yep.
Stay low.
Yeah. Wear all your safety gear.
And wear all your safety gear. There's no reason not to, right? But yeah, I would try a toe stopless practice. They're really fun, but they are dangerous.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to your ego.
I remember the first time you guys did it. Yeah. First time you missed that toe stop.
Yeah, and you do it because you're so used to it. It happened to me when we were doing the backwards crossovers around the hockey circles, and then we were supposed to stop and go forward, and I immediately was like on the ground. Yeah. I was like, great. I forgot I don't have these toe stops in. All right. So this show was brought to you tonight by this great product. It's called SweatX, and I love it. Like, I use it all the time, and he's our new sponsor. And let's face it, Derby boys and girls, your gear stinks, and that makes you stink, and that is true. SweatX gets all the bad bacteria that causes the stink while also killing 99% of the MRSA and staph infection viruses. SweatX has no dermal impact, so no worrying about allergic reactions caused by other detergents. And I have really bad eczema, so if I use the wrong detergent, it'll show up.
Okay.
So this is great stuff for me. I use it all the time. I wash the dog stuff in it because it smells good. I'm like, I'm going to make this smell good. All right. We have the stain remover spray for the marker and blood stains on your jerseys. And that works too. It got all of the little stains out from the markers. And I really wish we'd stop using marker and roller derby, but I understand why we use it. An odor eliminator spray for your skates, helmet, and bag that can't go in the wash. And I just sprayed my stuff last night with it. It smells much better. Call Susan at Derby City Skates. Her number is 336-926-9426 to order yours now. And also check our Facebook page, SweatX, for roller derby. So I'll put all this information up on the podcast and everything. So it's a really good product. I really like it. I just used it tonight, so I'm super excited. All right, and you've wasted another hour listening to Q's Tips. My guest, Nathan, you want to say anything about Collision, what you guys are up to, real quick?
So, not this weekend, but the weekend after, we're going to Denver. This is going to be a tournament with, first off, it's going to be a proper tournament, so with brackets and so on, and also we're going to be playing teams that are, in theory, in our general ranking area. So, it's going to be a lot of fun, and we'll keep everyone
posted. What's the one
on
team
that
you really would like to play if you get in this ranking that you get, you know?
Well, I think that the one that's probably closest. Well, okay. All right.
The one that you want to play.
The team from Utah.
Okay, there you go. What are they called? You know?
Their league is called the Mid-Mountain Cutthroat Mafia, but the travel team is called Uinta Madness.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, hope that happens for you guys.
Yeah,
hope so. Is it going to be broadcast?
I haven't heard that it will be, yeah.
All right, well, tune in next week. We'll find out. Thanks. Bye-bye.